Hi, everyone. I'm Brené Brown, and I'd love to tell you about my podcast, Dare to Lead. Innovation, creativity, building a better, more just world, all of these things require absolutely courageous leadership, especially given the complexity and chaos of the world right now. The Dare to Lead podcast is a collection of conversations with change catalysts, culture shifters, some troublemakers, folks who are really daring to create and change the world. I hope you join us.
From CAFE and the Vox Media Podcast Network, this is Stay Tuned in Brief. I'm your host, Preet Bharara. My guest this week is Pete Buttigieg. He first joined me on Stay Tuned in 2019 when he was on the cusp of announcing his candidacy for president. He told me then,
"Well, maybe the simplest way to introduce myself is that I'm a Midwestern millennial mayor."
He is now the Secretary of Transportation and most recently appeared as a guest on Stay Tuned in July 2021 to discuss President Biden's infrastructure legislation. I'm pleased to now catch up with him at the sidelines of Vox Media's Code Conference in California as he nears 2 years in his cabinet post. Mr. Secretary, thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you again.
So can we talk about infrastructure in the few minutes we have?
I love talking about infrastructure.
I know you do. It's infrastructure week once again.
Yeah, except it actually is.
Every week. So the first thing I want to ask you is about how well known this legislation is. I saw a poll that suggests that many Americans, I think one poll that said most Americans, may not be aware that the infrastructure bill passed. Does this mean you're not doing enough podcasts?
So I think what it means is that Americans are not always following the ins and outs of the legislative process or the blow-by-blow there. It is true. I think certainly by Washington standards at least, fewer people than you would think know that the infrastructure law passed. But the important thing is for people to know that we're doing a lot of infrastructure. In other words, it's less about the legislative vehicle that got it done and more about people recognizing and sensing and seeing that the funding and the decisions being made by this administration and the work that Congress did to give us these tools is actually being put to work for them.
But are these things that were in the pipeline already, or are these tangible consequences of that particular legislation?
These are things that would not be happening unless, or at least many of them wouldn't be happening without the grants that we're providing, and the grants wouldn't be happening without the legislation. So you can draw a direct connection between the president deciding this was a priority and the members of Congress who voted for it, and me being able to make an announcement with the people of these communities that, yes, we're going to get a new berth for this port. Yes, we're going to fix your streets and make them safer. Yes, we're going to be able to build a rail link here in this logistics hub and improve our supply chain.
Do you show up with a ceremonial shovel?
We started doing big checks, actually, just because
like
I didn't—
Like Publishers Clearinghouse?
Yeah, because I don't want, you know, especially on my side of the aisle, I think sometimes we're a little too subtle. And we need to make sure that there's no mistaking how and why this happened. This is your government working for you. And so we're doing the shovels for the groundbreakings. I'm doing the checks for the award announcement so that people understand in more concrete terms what this all adds up to.
So the money, what was it, like $1 million? What was in the bill?
So of the $1.2
trillion,
about trillion with a TR.
Yeah, okay.
About half of that is transportation related.
Okay. And of that, do you have an understanding as to how much of it is for new stuff and how much of it is to fix decaying stuff?
So part of that actually depends on what people come to us with. A lot of these are grant programs where a community is actually going to decide, hey, this is the thing we most need. And it might be to replace a bridge. We're just in Tucson, 22nd Street Bridge there. It's in rough shape, hasn't fallen down or anything like that. But because of its condition, they have to load limit the bridge. What that means is a heavy vehicle, school bus, truck, ambulance, not allowed, which of course has implications on everything from supply chains to emergency response. So we're going to help them replace it with a new one that won't have that problem. Other places, it is something completely new. It really depends. Some of the airport work, same thing. Sometimes it's building a whole new terminal. Sometimes it's repairing something that's been there for a long time. And what we're finding is the needs are different in each community. And so the programs are designed that way. We don't sit in Washington thinking up, oh, your town ought to have a bridge here.
Yeah, so I think this is something that people may not understand because they haven't read the bill. And actually, many members of Congress may also not have read the bill. That's our little secret. The bill doesn't set forth in line item, you know, which airports are going to get money, which streets are going to get repaired.
Right.
How broadly is that designated? And then when a local community, a state or a municipality wants to do something with infrastructure and transportation, how does that come into reality?
So the basic philosophy of these programs is that the ideas don't all have to come from Washington, but more of the funding should. And when we send out that funding, it's going to align with priorities that we care about. So I'm not going to sit there and say to a community, to Tulsa, you ought to have a bridge here or you ought to move your highway there. They're going to decide that. But what we will do is we'll put out word for example, in RAISE, that's one of our flagship programs that we just announced, about $2 billion in funding. You know, we're going to be looking for communities that have thought about safety, that have thought about climate and how their project is going to help with climate and pollution, that have thought about equity. And, if there's been a justice issue with who gets access to transportation, that this is going to make it better. And projects are going to do well when they reflect some of those considerations. So we shape the general policy priorities. They come up with the actual ideas, and we fund as many of the good ones as we can.
So let's say I'm a mayor of, I don't know, South Bend.
Sure.
I assume they have a new mayor.
They do.
They do. Yeah. Okay, good.
In fact, they just got a grant recently.
Oh, mm-hmm. Is that appropriate?
It was all based on staff recommendations.
So you're a mayor in some town, South Bend or elsewhere, and you think, well, this bill just got passed and there's a lot of money and we need some help. Do they send an email? Do they go on a portal? Like, what do they do?
Yeah. So the mechanics of it's actually something we're looking at because we're trying to make it a little less complicated. Because I remember being a mayor of South Bend. It's not like I had a federal affairs team on staff to navigate this stuff. And it's expensive to apply for federal money, which means some of the communities that need it most, small communities, rural communities, low-income communities, tribal communities, are some of those that would be at a disadvantage trying to get the funding. So what happens in these competitive programs, we put out a notice of funding opportunity, a NOFO in federal speak.
And you put that on a website?
Yeah, goes out on a website and basically says, here's the purpose of the grant, here's how to apply, here's what you need to do in order to be competitive. So to make it a little more specific, in a program like we have a resilience program. We'll put that out soon that we'll say, all right, here's a bunch of funding available to help your communities be more resilient. Maybe it's evacuation routes for hurricanes. Maybe it's how to move a roadway that keeps getting flooded because of climate change to higher ground so it doesn't get flooded anymore instead of just fixing it the way it was. Here are the things you need to do to qualify. A lot of it's about compliance, making sure that federal taxpayer dollars are being spent appropriately and transparently. But some of it's about policy, right? The things that we believe that Congress in the law set out for these dollars to be used for.
So how bureaucratic and lengthy is that?
Well, that's what I'm working on. So some of these notices of funding opportunity, the NOFO, so to speak, are more than 100 pages.
NOFO is also a bad nickname. I would change it from NOFO to something else.
All right. We'll see what people come up with. So one thing we did was we had three different programs, we rolled them up into one NOFO. In other words, one simple way to apply for all three of them so a community didn't have to navigate three different – it's kind of like the common application for college, right? So instead of having to fill in your zip code
– a little bit.
All right. So instead of having – before that, that would mean that if someone wants to apply to seven colleges, they got to fill in their address seven different times on seven different sheets of paper, right?
Wait, so the mayor has to do a personal statement?
that would be interesting, actually. That'd be one way to give them a little more flavor.
Put all the honors in there.
So, but my point is we're trying to make it less pages, less steps, less complications so that the less resourced communities can compete and win.
Is it sometimes the case, or is it always the case, that these possibilities for communities mean that they need a bridge built or a road rehabilitated, that the federal money will fund all of it? Or is there sometimes sort of a matching understanding?
Yeah, so it depends. A lot of it is based on a match, but sometimes the match is prohibitive. It could be 80%, 80 to 20, 20% local dollars. And that might not sound like a lot, but for a low-income community, certainly a community like I served as mayor, that could be the difference between whether you apply or whether you don't bother. So one of the things we've done in, for example, part of the bridge program for what are called off-system bridges, typically more smaller areas and more rural areas, that we've actually made it possible to do 100% match. That being said, in a lot of the programs, it's important to have that local match for the city, the transit agency, whoever's applying to demonstrate that they can bring some resources to the table. We'll do the rest.
So once somebody succeeds in getting a grant, let's say it's for the whole thing, no matching, and the money gets sent, gets put in a bank account somewhere, presumably?
It's usually a reimbursement system, but it depends.
Right. It's like it's not cryptocurrency; it's money.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. No, it's good.
And then once that happens and you're signed off, as the department, are you then unconnected to the project, or do you have some ability to, among other things, rein in cost and quality control?
No, there's a lot of quality control that goes on here. There's a lot of steps. Part of it's the NEPA, the famous National Environmental Protection Act process. Basically, anything that you do with federal dollars has to go through a number of procedural steps to make sure communities were included in decisions about what to do. That that is a key step. There's a lot of just kind of auditing checks and balances. We're talking about federal taxpayer money. It's very important to make sure it's very accountable. But let me also say this. You and I have mostly been describing the competitive grants, where we say there's $2 billion out there. Come to us with your great ideas. And then we pick the ideas that we think are strongest and most compliant. For every dollar that we do that way, there's many more that go out by formula. In other words, we send it to the state DOT. And as long as they're within the left and right boundaries of the law, they can use it on anything they see fit. And so we're also working a lot with the states on things like how these investments can help or hurt with something like safety, how they can do a good job of including workers and businesses that are owned by, for example, a lot of women-owned businesses, Black and Latino-owned businesses that have been cut out of contracting in past generations, that they get a fair chance to compete and win, and other things that are really a little bit indirect, kind of a bank shot, because we're not actually picking and choosing and spending. We're working with the people who do. So in a way, you could think of our role as the middle. At the beginning of an idea, so somebody else in a community is having an idea, we need this whatever, we need this new bus line, but they don't have the funding. They come to us, or you know, our federal dollars going through the state, and that's where the federal role comes in, and we help shape that. And then at the end, it's up to them to deliver, right? We don't actually do the digging or the construction. It's certainly not the operation. We just make sure that it's meeting the requirements for how to use federal dollars, and that it's successful. And then we got to do, I think, a better job as a federal government of making sure people know that this is how their tax dollars are being used.
More podcasts for you. Can you give a sense of, with respect to the $1.2 trillion, half of which is for transportation, how much is out the door and what the sort of disbursement will be over time?
So we're just over $90 billion in terms of dollars that have been made available.
Already?
Now, yeah. Now, that can mean a lot of different things. So I want to be clear. Sometimes that means that we've shipped the dollars to the states in the formula grants. Sometimes it means that they've been awarded. That doesn't necessarily mean that I'm learning a lot of convoluted steps to some of the movement of money. But to simplify a little bit, about $90 billion is out there now.
Do you see the pace picking up, or it'll be?
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, earlier I thought there'd be two stages to this job, really. The first year, which was selling and hopefully succeeding on getting that infrastructure law bill done. And then everything after, which is running these programs. I'm finding actually there have been three stages. The first, everything up until the president signed that law in November, was getting the bill passed and helping with that. Then this last year has really been creating all of the programs, all of the plumbing, so to speak, for these programs, these dollars, all of this to come together. 46 new programs were created within the Department of Transportation alone, in addition to growing the ones we already had. And that's everything from the resilience program I mentioned a little bit earlier, to a program that's dedicated on railroad crossing elimination and all kinds of things. So we're standing these things up that never existed before. In this, the first of the five fiscal years covered by the bill, where that $660 billion has to move. I'm really looking forward to the next stage, the 4 years ahead, because then what we're doing is the programs exist, we're fine-tuning and we're improving and we're checking how they're going, we're making them better, we're seeing the projects that work best, the ones that came up short. In many ways, the hardest part, and in many ways, the decisive part, because the implementation, the execution, the results, that's what this is all about. But that's the stage that we're launching into now. But the fun part of it is getting out in these communities, seeing the first of all, the pride of the local leaders who put together these visions and are now getting them funded. Yeah. And then most of all, talking to the people whose lives are going to change because of the improvements, whether their commute's getting shorter, their neighborhood's getting safer, their air's getting cleaner, all because we're taking this action.
Which, you know, leads me to ask the question, because I don't know the answer to this, doing a lot of traveling, going to communities, as you've been describing. Do you have a plane? Is there like Transportation Secretary One?
So most of the time I'm on an airliner. Definitely yesterday, tomorrow.
You're a commercial airliner?
Yes. But once in a while, yeah, there is.
So when you fly in an airplane and there's crappy service, do they know that you're Pete Buttigieg?
I'm guessing it just kind of depends. but I mean, I've definitely had my share.
You say, do you know who I am? Do you do that?
No.
I got canceled.
You shouldn't do that.
In fact, we're careful. You know, if I'm traveling on the government dime and I happen to get upgraded because of my frequent flyer or whatever, I try to, you know, get back out of there because I don't think it's a good look to be sitting in first class when you're on government, you know, travel.
You think it's a better look to be sitting by the lavatory in the back as a cabinet secretary?
I mean, sometimes that's where they put me, and that's—
They do. Yeah. I was a government servant, you know, for a long time, and I would be on planes with friends in first class. Like, what are you doing in the middle seat in the back? Like, that's the government job.
I try to go for a window or an aisle seat, but sometimes it's a middle seat. It is what it is. Look, I mean, I've probably been canceled 3 times in the last 2 or 3 months. So you know, we've all experienced some of the frustrations of air travel, and we're seeing improvement too, but there's a long way to go, and we're going to stay on that.
Last question, because this is Stay Tuned in Brief. Is there a favorite project that you have seen funded or that has been mentioned to you that's part of this?
I wouldn't dare pick a favorite, but let me just tell you the one I saw today. Yeah. I'm seeing one just about every day.
You were telling me about it before we started.
So my new word of the day is centroid. Centroid sounds like a Star Trek.
It's a robotic insect.
Yeah, no, it's a term for this thing at the Port of LA. Basically, picture it's the shape of a racetrack, kind of an elliptical shape made out of railroad. And very creatively, they started using the inner space of it, which hadn't been used very much, to put extra chassis and containers during this period we faced last year when so many containers were building up, container ships that were coming in an irregular wave from China post-COVID or during that stage of COVID. And what we're in order for a truck to get into or out of that zone, they have to cross this elliptical track, and there's one place to cross it, which isn't very optimal because either the truck has to wait or the trains have to wait, or there's a tunnel which doesn't really work well either. So we're building a bridge over this track into the so-called centroid that is going to mean more chassis availability, containers moving more quickly. It's going to save something like 2,500 truck hours per day when it's complete, and we're giving them $20 million to help get it done. So that's just one example of something that, you know, most people will never see that or feel it or know it, but you could be sitting at our house in Michigan and a product will get to you sooner or cost a little bit less to ship because that improvement was made in the Port of Los Angeles, and that's everything is connected, and that's what we're trying to support and deal with all these funds.
So we are out of time because it's in brief. Thank you for your service, safe travels, and congratulations on becoming a dad.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Secretary Pete Buttigieg. If you like what we do, rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Every positive review helps new listeners find the show. Send me your questions about news, politics, and justice. Tweet them to me at Preet Bharara with the hashtag AskPreet. Or you can call and leave me a message at 669-247-7338. That's 669-24-PREET. Or you can send an email to letters@cafe.com. Stay Tuned is presented by Cafe and the Vox Media Podcast Network. The executive producer is Tamara Sepper. The technical director is David Tatasciore. The senior producer is Adam Waller. The editorial producers are Sam Ozer-Staten and Noah Azulai. The audio producer is Nat Wiener. And the Cafe team is Matthew Billy, David Kurlander, Jake Kaplan, Namita Shah, and Claudia Hernandez. Our music is by Andrew Dost. I'm your host, Preet Bharara. Stay tuned.